everyone. You're listening to Slurpcast,
where we don't slurp anymore. If Wes has ruined all our traditions, we used to eat dinner and mumble and
this is the annual podcast where Mark Bernay and I get together to go over the week's goings on in tech.
Right.
And slurp our food, which we are not doing
I have a new tradition.
Because we were doing video at one point, and when we were doing video, it just kind of looked disgusting while we were eating food and doing the show. And so we kind of made this decision to film after we ate. And that just sort of stuck.
And now we're kind of like slurping, isn't it?
Yeah. And now we're doing an audio-only show.
Okay.
We're posting this up because the stream with all of our old audio shows is still very much alive and still there.
Okay.
I don't know. We figured that it would be easier to just do audio, go back to the old thing. So here we are. And we have stories. And Mark Bernay found that... where are we, Mark?
At the Emeryville Market in Emeryville, California.
And that's where? What country?
United States of America. It's kind of near Orinda, California, isn't it?
Really?
Like, how far do you think it is?
That was
from
that
Orinda,
CPM software company that made in Orinda, California, that made
WordTech Systems. Yeah,
yeah.
They made little templates, keycaps for word processors.
Right, and then the templates that would go on top of the IBM keyboards to allow you to use word processing software.
Was it templates or different entire key replacements?
Oh, did they have entire key replacements?
Or was it little stickers?
I think it was like the little plastic cardboard overlay thing you put on top or around the keys.
Yeah, okay.
I don't remember.
Okay.
So let's see. I'm trying to connect to the wireless public market, and you're saying it does work.
Yeah, it worked for me. I didn't have to log in or nothing. Yeah.
Connecting. Mark and I both have Nexus 7 tablets.
I would never have anything other than an Apple product. What the hell are you talking about?
Well, he's
why is he lying like this?
But they can't see.
I'm going to show this to the public. Excuse me, ladies and gentlemen. What is this device I have in my hand?
It looks like
it's an Apple.
It's a Mac Mini.
Right. Okay.
So I'm not connecting. That's because I'm not Mark Bernay.
Right. Yeah, it worked for me. Okay. Anyway.
Was it public market?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. So let's go over some stories. Do you have anything interesting that you want to share? What's going on? I know you've collected stories for the past several years.
I had an experience yesterday that fits into two different things. AirPlay speakers, the whole AirPlay
system. That's right.
For Apple devices.
So for those who don't know.
And also eBay Now. Yeah, go ahead.
There's a phenomenon called Bluetooth speakers, and that's become fairly popular. But now there are companies that are selling what are called AirPlay speakers, and those are speakers you can connect to through Wi-Fi.
Right.
So you would actually...
But through a specific Apple protocol called AirPlay.
It does require Wi-Fi, right?
Yes.
And it is also available. I think it's open source enough so that Android phones can use AirPlay.
I think I've seen apps for that, But AirPlay can also do video as well.
Oh, really? Okay.
To an Apple TV device, yeah.
Okay.
That's one of the big advantages, actually, to having an Apple TV instead of a Google TV is that you can AirPlay videos and movies and stuff like that on your big TV set with us. So I just wanted better speakers for my Mac notebook.
Yes. The other side, though, is that AirPlay does not compress the audio. So unlike Bluetooth speakers, AirPlay will allow you to send a stream through Wi-Fi
that's
uncompressed.
Okay.
And it supposedly sounds much better than what you would get through a Bluetooth sound connection.
But... yeah, my problem with it, it sounds okay, except the device I bought has all cheap speakers. It just sounds cheap to me.
Okay.
Like, you spend less than several hundred dollars for a device. I've never been satisfied with the audio of it.
Right.
And this is one of those that just doesn't sound very good.
But you aren't really satisfied with Bose either.
They're better than this.
Okay.
I'm not satisfied with them for the money, but they're better than this anyway.
Okay.
And what's the other one, the Bose clone ones? There's another sound design or something that looks just like Bose, but they...
Okay.
I never liked that one either.
Huh. Yeah. Boston Acoustics or...
Maybe.
Okay.
You know, part of what Bose's claim to fame is that it has these spiral subwoofers that...
Okay.
Kind of a spiral shape inside.
Okay.
So this other company was cloning that with very similar looks. But I never liked the sound of it.
Bose touts the fact that they don't amplify or EQ any of the audio. So when you buy a Bose speaker system, you're supposed to be getting clean audio without any kind of weird amplification. Unlike Dr. Dre, the Beats audio.
Right.
Beats audio speakers like amplify the bass built into the device. So you're getting pre-EQ'd headphones.
They still just sound cheap to me, even the Bose.
Really?
Even the $700 Bose ones kind of sound cheap.
It's just because it's not made by Steve, isn't it, Mark?
Well, yeah.
Okay.
Although, no, I don't like my notebook sound. That's why I was looking for these things in the first place, to have a MacBook Air, and the speakers are just never loud enough.
Okay.
It's not really the quality of the sound, it's just they're not loud enough for a lot of things.
Okay.
So anyway, so I started out looking at Bluetooth speakers, and then I ran into these AirPlay speakers. And AirPlay just seemed like it'd be more modern, and also you can play AirPlay from the MacBook, or you could use your phone, tell your phone to send to them. Although it doesn't switch as smoothly as I thought it would between devices, but at least you can kind of do it.
Mm-hmm.
You have to pair them all over again like you do with Bluetooth.
Well, the nice thing about the Bose is that once you pair your device, you shouldn't have to pair it again.
But can you pair multiple devices?
Yeah, you can, but that is a limiting factor. You can only pair like 3 to 5 devices, I think, to these particular Bose speakers. These are the SoundLink speakers is what I'm talking about.
Well, the ones I've been looking at, the cheaper ones, like the $150 ones, Bluetooth ones, they don't mention pairing more than one device at a time, so you have to go through the whole pairing thing every time, I think. But maybe I'm wrong.
Well, Bose is coming out with another version of the SoundLink. They're called the SoundLink 2 speakers, and they're supposed to allow you to pair a whopping 8 or something like that. 8 different devices to
these
speakers.
I'd be happy with like 2 or something. But
yeah. But well, for most people, Bluetooth is good enough, and it doesn't waste that much power, and it's possible that hooking your AirPlay speakers up to a wireless device or to a Wi-Fi network might actually drain the batteries more than it would if you just use Bluetooth.
I don't care, because I'm not going to carry it portably. I just want to see on the same table as my notebook just for better sound. Which
you better? Why
wouldn't
you just go analog? Why
don't
you just go like line out and line in?
Because when I move the notebook, I don't know, it's just one extra thing I have to unplug to move the notebook.
Okay.
I guess that's really the only reason. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. But, all right. Well, they also have devices that you can plug the output of your device that's making sound, whether it be your computer or what have you, into a little transmitter.
Okay.
And then you can put on the speaker side the receiver and plug the speakers into that. I've seen those devices as well. That would allow you to actually like use your existing amplifier.
That's true.
To receive audio from your laptop. That's another alternative.
That's
and I think I'm not sure who makes those, but they're pretty common, I think.
Anyway, so this one I bought, it's a, what brand is it? I saw that it was sold at Apple Store, so I figured it couldn't be that bad. But number one, I just don't like the sound of it that much.
Mm-hmm.
And number two, AirPlay for video works fine. Like I use AirPlay sometimes from my iPad to my TV set, and that plays full speed. Everything's beautiful with it.
Okay. Right.
Although partly because I think the Apple TV takes over the stream and goes out on the internet on its own and takes it over.
Right.
I don't think it's really AirPlaying every second of the stuff.
Okay.
But anyway, that basically works perfectly.
Well, that's what the Google thing does. If you're using like an Android device and you go to like Google or YouTube, there's
really
like a little symbol
over,
that shows up if it sees a Google TV.
Right.
But it turns out that the Google TV, it's just the tablet or your phone is saying, here's the video I want you to play.
Yeah,
and then the Google TV goes out.
AirPlay half seems to be doing that same thing.
Huh, okay.
But on the other hand, it works perfectly whatever it is. So I tried doing an experiment from my notebook to my Apple TV, and the audio sounded fine. So I thought this would be a good thing to try an AirPlay speaker. But the real problem with it is that AirPlay buffers the sound by about 2 seconds to make sure it won't stutter or anything.
Okay.
Which means if you're watching a video on the notebook and then you buffer the sound only, the sound literally gets 2 or 3 seconds behind the video, and it just, and not, you know, even a slight bit out of sync, you notice lips not moving right. But it's much worse than that. I mean, the person will speak and then a couple of sentences, and suddenly the sound starts coming out.
Okay, that's terrible.
Yeah, so I'm probably going to have to give them back because of that factor.
Okay. Were they Sennheiser?
No, it's...
Okay. I bought a pair of Sennheisers from Apple, and they were Bluetooth. They were fairly cheap looking, but I figured, well, Sennheiser's a good name, and it's at the Apple store, so it's going to be good quality.
Right.
And I took them, and they sounded terrible. I mean, absolutely terrible.
But speakers or headphones?
No, headphones. Just headphones. Okay. Bluetooth headphones, because I was looking for a replacement.
Sennheiser's supposed to sound good for... headphones anyway, right?
Yeah. And I've had stereo monitor headset headphones for doing stereo recording or for doing mixing.
Okay.
And they were okay. They were also fairly expensive. But yeah, this was horrible. I took it back and I don't see them anymore at the Apple store, so I think many people complained.
Okay.
I couldn't imagine anybody being okay with that.
Yeah, I forget now what brand these are, but it's something I never heard of before.
Okay.
But anyway, so I'm probably really going to have to give them back and get a Bluetooth one just for the speed or just plug in speakers in, as you said, or whatever.
Well, yeah, the Jambox is good, the large one, but it's pretty expensive.
Yeah.
I mean, you're almost better off going with the sound, was it the...
You know how for Bluetooth headphones, there's Jabra competes with Jawbone and makes the Jambox.
Yes.
And Jabra also makes a lot of Bluetooth headsets. But it turns out that Jabra has something just like the Jambox, but for about $150, the people claim sounds better.
Huh.
So I've been thinking about getting that one. But
maybe.
Yeah. But anyway, so I bought it as an experiment. eBay has this new thing called eBay Now.
Okay.
Which is a really stupid name because it's impossible to search on. If you try to do a Google search on eBay Now, you get eBay Buy It Now. It's very difficult to find eBay Now without the word buy it in it.
And it's an Android or iOS app?
No, it's not.
Oh, it's just...
Oh, yeah, I don't know, actually. Yeah, it is an app. I forgot about that. But,
okay.
But basically, the concept is eBay's trying to get in the business of competing with Amazon.
Okay.
But Amazon has, like, next-day delivery at the best.
Okay.
Whereas eBay now is trying to do same-day delivery, like, within 1 hour.
Wow, okay. But so only in certain areas?
Only in San Francisco and New York as an experiment.
All right.
So they offer $15 off your first purchase.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, $20 off and $5 shipping. So I figured instead of going to Best Buy by myself and buy it, I'd buy it through eBay Now, which said that they had Best Buy as a partner.
Okay.
So you think that they just have this big warehouse somewhere and they rush people to pick it up from the warehouse. But
no.
You know, there are apps like Exec, and there's like personal assistant apps that you hire someone just to do a task for you.
Right.
You know, you pay them $5, like TaskRabbit or Exec, things like that.
What was the name of that service that you could order things from on the web?
The old one, Cosmo?
Remember the old company that was really popular for a while, but they did a very bad job of just during the dot-com boom?
No, what Cosmo. You sure it's not Cosmo?
No.
Because that was one
It wasn't Cosmo. They had the trucks, and they would deliver things in San Francisco. And
you know, Cosmo did that, but only for food.
So did Safeway as well.
Yeah. Okay.
I forget the name. It's terrible, because they were one of the dot-com darlings at the time. But, I guess we're kind of going that way again in with this eBay thing.
Wait,
you're
so eBay
about.
Now is trying to simulate, I guess, what it would be like if they had a big warehouse and could deliver things in one hour. What they really do is that whatever item you type in, it shows where it's available in a partner store, and then they send a regular person from their home that they contract with to drive their car around. Is the impression that this regular person just leaves their house, runs over and picks up the item from the store, delivers it to you, and then goes back home again, I guess, waits for another job. That's the way they kind of act.
Okay.
And there's taxi cab apps that when you call a taxi, it shows you where your taxi is on a map.
Okay.
Listing does the same thing. It brings up a picture of your courier and gives them their phone number if you want to call them directly.
Okay.
Then it shows on a map where they all are all the time.
Okay.
So anyway, so she calls me up just to verify the order.
Uh-huh.
Then the app was showed that she was at the Best Buy on Geary.
Okay.
And just showed she was there for a long time. Then she calls me up and says that there's going to be a delay because this store was supposed to have it, but it turns out it's not in stock. You know, the computer shows it. They couldn't actually find it.
Okay.
So she's going to have to go over to the other Best Buy. So anyway, so I watch on the map. I watch her drive to the other Best Buy. She's there for a while.
That's cute.
Then I see she's driving towards my house. When I see her on my block, I go outside to meet her. And it turns out it's not just her. She's driving around with some other guy driving. And the way she knew all about it and asked me questions about her stuff, I get the impression that she works for eBay directly.
Okay.
It's not just some person that worked out of their house like I thought. And apparently I'm the first person to ever use this, so they had to try to have this team of people come over to make it work.
Kind of like the Microsoft smartwatch?
I don't know. That's just...
Yeah.
It's just my impression is that this isn't really ready for prime time whatsoever.
Okay.
And they're just trying to force it to work, you know, or something.
Huh. Interesting.
Anyway, so she's all concerned about where I heard about this.
Oh, really?
Where some old crazy old guy like me is about this from.
She's like, how dare you actually use this service?
Will I ever use it again? I said, well, no, I've been kind of hesitant because it's so kludgy. This just doesn't seem like it's going to scale well. I can't imagine you continuing to do it.
Yeah.
If this is the way you have to do it.
Okay.
You know.
Wow, that's funny. That is pretty funny. So, would you do it again? I mean,
I don't know. It's too personal. I just want to, like, UPS just deliver stuff, you know?
Right.
I don't want this whole personal contact with a real human being.
That might work better for people who have problems receiving things from UPS if they're working and they have things delivered to their house.
Right. Yeah, this one at least you can schedule exactly when they're going to show up.
Okay. That would be kind of better than... Yeah. Well, there might be a need for that. I mean, maybe that would be the thing that they would fill in. Go to the post office, get my package or whatever, deliver it over at this specific time.
Yeah. Anyway.
It might work.
Yeah. And see, then the worst part, I was assuming that I had no idea if I would really like this or not.
Okay.
I figured that's just coming from Best Buy, so if I don't like it, I'll go back to Best Buy and return it and listen to all the other ones and find something I like better.
Okay.
So... turns out you can't return it to the store directly. You have to return it to eBay now.
Okay.
And they come and pick it up again. So it just makes you feel guilty. And in a way, it's convenient. I don't have to do anything, but I just feel guilty about the whole thing.
Don't feel guilty. They're providing a service. You should use the service and return it if that's what they want. Then
that's
do it
true.
That way.
Yeah.
You know how we talked a lot about the Nespresso?
Right.
So I don't mean to switch gears in a weird way, but you were visiting your friend, and at where you were visiting in this area on the East Coast, they had these Nespresso stores, and they were touting their coffee as being the best and had all these great like pods.
The design of the stores is very, very high-tech design and beautiful design.
Right.
I mean, totally different from an Apple store, but the same concept of the design of the store is part of why you'd buy it.
Right.
Yeah.
But it was really nice. Right. Anyway, and your friend was touting Nespresso as being way better than all the different coffee pod-based coffee machines that are out right now for single-serve coffee.
Possibly because it was fancy-looking. Maybe fooled by that. I'm not sure.
Well, no, but I've actually done some research and talked to various people who also agree that Nespresso is a really good, if you can afford it, it's a really good single-serve espresso machine. It has all the milk. It adds the milk, does the blending, and allows you to do that whole thing right there. Right. Well, so I discovered this thing on Gizmodo, and I just wanted to read real quick. It's the articles by Andrew Lazuski.
Okay.
A few years ago, Stilton released a handheld espresso maker that allowed coffee aficionados to brew up a cup of joe whenever they needed their fix. It was compact, sleek, and everything that the coffee-to-go machine from Trisa isn't. In its defense, on a single charge, the considerably bulkier coffee-to-go was able to serve up 16 piping-hot espressos before running out of juice. So if you can stash one of these things in an oversized briefcase, there's the potential of being a hero to a small busload of under-caffeinated corporate types. But the price tag of over $540, this pricey portable percolator seems squarely targeted at the 17 people in the country who don't have easy access to Starbucks around the corner. I just figured it was kind of an interesting article.
So that's an Nespresso though, somehow?
Yeah, so this is an espresso maker, but it's battery-operated and portable. So I thought that was kind of cool. I'm not clear if it's pod-based, where you put a pod in there. And then it makes the espresso from the pod. I believe that's probably how it's
for
how
best
it works.
Portability. You think it would want to be easy, like
But I figured I'd share that.
Well, what I liked about the Nespresso is that you don't, you know, normally espresso makers that have a steamer, you take a cup and you go in the refrigerator and pour some milk in the cup, and then you put the steam spout in that cup. And Well, Nespresso has this. The more expensive espressos have this big, fancy container of milk that you keep in the refrigerator all the time, and you just take that container out of the refrigerator, plug it into the machine, and it'll make the steam milk for you right now. But then whatever milk is left over in the container, you just put back in the refrigerator,
right?
So kind of like that.
But it's a $500. Those are like $500 or $600 devices right there, the higher end ones that you're talking about.
Yeah.
The cheaper ones have this strange like thermos-like device that sits to the side of the espresso machine.
Okay.
And what it does is you pour milk into this thing, and you press a button, and it stirs, it froths the milk.
But you have to pour milk in each time?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. It's a small little thin thing. But people who I talk to who have used that say there's no problem with that. They're perfectly fine with that.
But then you have to clean it every time?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
Okay.
But they really do feel that it's better than some of the Keurigs and the other devices that are out there on the market. So maybe I'll get one. I'm not sure. We'll see. My concern is that it's not easy to go buy pods for the Nespresso.
There, where you are, where you work, it is.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, that's
right
true.
By
you
by
have
the Emporium.
That had the Westfield
you're
Mall.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
And not the Emporium. What's the name of the big store?
Could you buy them? I guess you can get
What's
them
What's the name
there.
Of the big store there? The store you walk through to get to the food court on that side of the food court. What's the name of that one? Bloomingdale's.
Bloomingdale's?
Yeah, Bloomingdale's.
Yeah, but you wouldn't want to buy pods or anything like that from Bloomingdale's. Oh, you mean the devices?
Yeah, they sell the pods.
The devices,
No,
sure.
Yes, you would, because the pods are really expensive at an espresso store.
Okay.
At Bloomingdale's probably sells
They're
them.
They're supposed to be less expensive than the Vivosado or whatever it is from from Starbucks. That's supposed to be $2 a pod if you include the cream pod.
That's what I don't like about those, though, that it uses powdered cream.
Yeah, so
pod.
Let's let the audience know. So Starbucks, if you haven't already seen this, but they're now selling a espresso machine that you can take home as well.
Right.
So their goal is that they want you to buy the Starbucks pods, and that includes an additional pod that actually holds powdered cream or something like that.
So it's not going to taste as good because it's like powdered cream, right?
Right. And but the machine takes care of the mixing for you, and for people who are on the go and need an espresso very quickly, you can get a similar Starbucks experience by buying this Vivosado or Vivosado.
And if you want a free coffee at Starbucks, just tell them you want to demonstrate the machine. And they'll make you a, they'll make you one on it, which I didn't really like as much as regular Starbucks, actually.
Okay.
But they'll make you one for free on that machine, at least. Yeah, I've never looked at the price of an espresso, but when you see how fancy the store is, somehow it's got to be expensive, is what I'm saying. But Bloomingdale's probably isn't any more expensive than Are they going to open an espresso store in Union Square, I think, or something? I think I heard a rumor about that. Maybe.
So folks, if you guys have want to weigh in on your thoughts, definitely let us know. You can go to slurpcast.com, and we post the blog there, and basically we use Blogger, Blogspot, Microsoft / Google's, not Microsoft anymore.
Google's,
it used to be Microsoft, wasn't it?
Was it? I don't know. Yeah.
It's Google's blogging software.
Okay.
But yeah, it allows you to actually like post comments, and you can tell us to jump off a cliff if you feel that we're no good.
If you feel that Starbucks is better than Nespresso,
or if you feel we should stop podcasting from a place where little kids run around and scream, that's fine. You can go ahead.
Right next to the ball pit where the kids are playing with a big stack of balls.
Yeah, you know where like kids go and they kind of they do all kinds of mucous membrane stuff comes out
balls,
into the balls.
And
then every kid who goes in gets sick because they don't ever clean it. You remember that?
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway. Next story. Your story. Your turn.
So,
buttons on your coat.
Trying to think if there's anything more I want to say about eBay now. No, I guess not.
So, is eBay dying?
I don't think so. Why?
I'm just curious.
Not that I know.
People do sell things on eBay and they profit,
absolutely,
right?
Yeah.
So,
there's no competitor for it that anyone uses, is there?
That's true. No.
Yeah.
I was going to say Craigslist.
Yeah.
Craigslist is kind of the next thing.
That's different, though.
It's local. It's local. Craigslist is free. eBay's free, too.
Right. Craigslist doesn't have all the feedback and all the shipping built in, all that stuff.
Okay.
It's not an auction. Craigslist doesn't... Actually, Craigslist should add an auction, shouldn't they?
No, because I think the auction doesn't go over well with everybody.
Okay.
That's why you have the Buy It Now button on eBay, but I don't think the auction goes over really well.
Most items on eBay are still auction, I think, though.
See, the problem with eBay is because it's not local, it's not focused on your geography like Craigslist is. Whatever you sell, there's somebody in the world willing to bid more for it than what it might even be worth retail.
So for the seller, that's a good thing, you know?
Sure, but that's why I'm not very attracted to eBay.
Right.
If I were selling things, I might look at eBay as a serious solution to my selling woes.
Right.
But as somebody who's buying, unless it's something that's kind of used and old that I really just kind of have a
Or something unique that you really can't find.
Like a QuickTake 150 by Apple.
Right.
Yeah.
Which one's that?
That was
that's that camera.
That was the binocular-like camera that they sold.
Yeah, right. If you wanted to find that, you'd probably have to do it on eBay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I actually have bought things like that from eBay.
Okay.
So, in that case, it works.
But eBay now, as I say, has absolutely nothing to do with the standard eBay. It's just totally this experiment on whether people will accept fast delivery or not, I guess.
Okay.
Anyway, we talked before about Raspberry Pi, I think.
Yes. They also have an app store?
Yeah, they have.
I don't quite get that, but go ahead with your story.
Yeah, Raspberry Pi is this thing I used to think with Vaporware, where it actually came out.
Yeah, and there's actually more than one model of it, right?
Yes, an internal Linux machine for only $35. It has an HDMI out. It has an Ethernet port, a SD card slot for the operating system and memory, and then like your virtual RAM disk and stuff.
Okay.
And what else
is it? How do you load the? Do you have to load the OS every single time you want to use it?
No, you put it on the SD card.
Okay.
You can buy an SD card already formatted, or there's instructions where you plug the SD card into a PC or Mac, and you can load the operating system onto it.
Okay.
And then it also has a USB port. So it's just a complete computer, except you have to add keyboard and mouse and all that stuff.
Okay.
But the operating system is just Linux. It's a stripped-down version of Linux. Okay. That can run on that.
Now, I heard the graphics processor that's a part of the Raspberry is actually the equivalent of what the Xbox was.
So it's actually pretty...
Not Xbox 360, but the first Xbox. So it's actually fairly powerful graphics processing.
Right.
So I don't know how true that is, but if so, that makes it a fairly, usable device for doing...
Yeah, so it's just something you have to put it all together, because, I mean, the Raspberry Pi itself comes as one piece. Mm-hmm. But just as a board with no case, so you have to, pretty minimum, find a case for it.
Okay.
Then you have to build the OS and stuff, and you have to find the application that you want to run on Linux.
Okay.
For one thing, and then plug an HDMI monitor.
So what use would somebody want? What would this satisfy? Like, what need does the Raspberry Pi satisfy?
Just something cheapness for someone who just needs a computer and can't afford anything better.
Really?
I guess.
I mean, would somebody really get a Raspberry Pi just to use as a computer?
Maybe.
I mean, yes, it includes Linux, but how usable is that Linux? Is it a full-fledged, full-on Linux flavor with
all the tools? It's just that it doesn't have that much memory and stuff.
Okay.
So, I think.
Really? I mean, I could see somebody doing like maybe some kind of appliance or some kind of a gadget or toy that runs a fairly complex Linux application, let's say.
Right.
I could see that, or maybe a device that plugs into a phone or an Ethernet jack that
monitors.
Like,
an Arduino or something.
That's kind of how I saw the Raspberry
Pi. It also has an I.O. bus. I'm not sure what it can do, but besides all the standardized ports, it also has a jumper on the top with a bunch of pins that you can run like an I.O. bus on it somehow.
Yeah, an app that turns on and off your lights in your house or something like that.
Yeah.
That's kind of how I saw it. So it never really kind of sat with me that you'd use it as a standard, like a laptop or something.
But one could if one wanted to, I'm just saying.
Okay.
People have built a supercomputer out of a whole array of Raspberry Pis.
Okay, well, there's the answer right there. You can do it.
No, but supercomputers, the programming is very, very specialized. It's not something you'd use at home. But I'm just saying you can put a whole bunch of them together and make a faster, normal computer out of them.
Okay.
With specialized software.
Okay.
They can handle that.
It's kind of like the people who strung all the PlayStations together to form a supercomputer.
Right,
it was actually cheaper to buy the PlayStations to get the equivalent power that rack space would cost.
Sure. Yeah. But the Raspberry Pi probably is as good as...
The PlayStation?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe, because if I...
I think Raspberry Pi would be way cheaper than PlayStations to string together.
Right.
They're probably just as powerful.
Huh.
You know,
that's interesting. So we're going to post these links. Mark will share them with me, and I'll post them up on the site. So, is that it for your...
So there's a similar one. Mm-hmm. What's it called? Odroid or something? Maybe I have the details here. No. Anyway, there's an Odroid, O-D-R-O-I-D board that's similar to the Raspberry Pi, except that it's $69 instead of $35.
Okay.
And it runs Android.
Okay.
So it's like a development kit if you want to develop cellular phone applications or something. It's like the Android part of a cellular phone, but without the phone.
Huh.
So again, I'm not quite sure who before, except for kids learning Android or something.
Yeah, interesting. Right. Okay. Yeah, because I would prefer, like, for Python development to go with the standard Raspberry Pi board.
Oh, that can run Python?
Well, I don't know. Yeah. That's the thing. Does it have enough?
Right.
If it runs Linux, then you could probably install a Python interpreter.
The trouble is I'm not sure how much RAM it can have. You may not be able to take enough RAM, I suppose.
Yeah. Huh. Okay, so a company called Extreme Software develops something to allow Android devices to use standard USB audio hardware.
Oh, okay.
Let's see. This article came out on the 17th of December, a while back, from KVR News.
Okay.
Extreme Software Development has released USB Audio Recorder Pro, which is the name of the application. It's a new app for Android that allows audio recording and playback using a standards-compliant USB audio device.
Huh.
This is a first for Android. The app costs $299, but that's in euros.
Okay.
Many musicians and audio enthusiasts with Android devices have been waiting for this feature, which is common on iOS devices. You can actually plug in audio, external keyboards, things like that, to play music on iOS devices. Now it's available for Android. As authors of the multi-track audio app Audio Evolution Mobile for Android saw a need for their users to get high-quality, low-latency audio to their devices, and they spent several months writing a custom USB audio driver from scratch. As of today, this USB audio capability is now available through their USB Audio Recorder Pro, that's the name of the app, and will be integrated into the Audio Evolution Mobile in the first quarter of the next year.
Maybe you mean $2.99, right? Not
no, $2.99.
But not 200 euro.
Euros.
But not 200.
That's like $5.
Yeah, but not 200 anyway.
No, no, okay. $2.99 is the name. Yeah. That's the app. That's the actual cost of the app, which has the driver.
Okay. Does it need to root? Does the device need to be rooted?
No, I don't think so. Required are an Android 3.1 or higher device supporting USB host mode and a USB OTG cable, and to enable the USB host mode and convert from micro USB to full-size USB.
I think host mode requires rooted phone, I think.
No root access is needed,
really?
It says. Some audio devices need a powered hub if the Android device does not supply enough power.
Okay.
For more information, including a link to a trial version, is available on Google Play.
Okay.
Audio Evolution Mobile is now 30% off. And it can be found here. So I'll post this in the show notes. But that's good news for people who are interested in using external audio devices that might have really high-quality audio DACs for doing recording, kind of like the PMD that we're using right now.
Right.
But hook it into their Android device.
Oh, cool.
That means we would not have to carry this thing. We could actually do it on an Android phone.
But you're saying iOS can do that anyway? You can plug a USB...
iOS has had that sort of functionality for a little bit.
Oh, you plug it into like the camera connection kit or something?
I believe that's how you do it, You have the camera connection kit with the USB port on the other side.
Okay.
Plug it into the 30-pin connector, and then you can plug in like
30-pin connector? iOS devices don't have a 30-pin connector. You thinking of 1999 or something? What are you talking about?
Yes.
But
what's it called?
Lightning?
What?
The lightning connector?
No, the opposite of the lightning. It's the 30-pin connector.
Right.
Right? Before the lightning connector?
Yeah.
Oh, you're being Apple in the sense that you won't recognize the two of them together.
Together at the same time? We don't allow that. Apple didn't used to allow devices to do both at the same time, but apparently they do now.
Well, they changed their licensing because of that whole that startup.
There's a Kickstarter project.
Yeah, but it's still a problem. There's something that actually causes the Kickstarter to not actually want to go back to supporting Apple devices.
Yeah. Okay.
I forget what it is.
Because they wanted to do USB and the Apple both. Apple let them do both Apple, but they won't let them do USB at the same time.
Right, so this Kickstarting company, I forget the name of the company, wanted to have a hub that could sit and basically supply power to any device, Android or iOS.
Right, okay.
And Apple was like playing the bad guy and said, you can't have a 30-pin connector and a lightning bolt connector attached to the same device.
Okay.
So they basically threw their hands up in the air and said, forget it. This is not going to sell. If we can't do this, then we're out.
Right.
The CEO of the company who founded this also has another company for auctioning or paying back users for bad auctions or something like that.
Okay,
so he's offloading all those people, basically saying, well, I'll give you your money back through this other auction site.
Oh, okay. Fine.
And that's my understanding of what's going on with that
but then
Kickstarter
project. Because of all the bad publicity, Apple, around the same time, probably because of the publicity of this, changed their mind and is allowing a device to have both connectors on at the same time.
Yes.
But no USB, I think, or something.
Something
like that.
That's causing them, this Kickstarter, to not want to use app, not want to go ahead with the project.
Of course, they could have just bought cables, See, like the Kickstarter dock I have where you plug an iPhone into this big fancy dock, they get around that problem just by making an adapter that a regular Lightning cable threads through their dock and sticks up at the top.
Okay.
And they just hold it in. So that's why they didn't need a license for Apple or anything, because they're just having people buy their own actual Lightning cable.
Oh, I see.
We never talked about the new Chromebooks, did we?
No, we haven't talked about Chromebooks in a while.
It's kind of an old item.
We thought they were going to die.
Right.
Do you want to explain what the Chromebook is?
I still think it'll die, frankly. But
okay.
Anyway, Chromebook is Google's experiment to make their own operating system. And they're hoping that instead of running the Chrome browser under some other operating system, they'll have their own stripped-down operating system just big enough to run Chrome and really hardly anything else.
Okay.
And they call it the Chrome OS.
Yeah.
Although the Chrome OS is actually something different. There's a open-source project. The Chrome OS is really some open-source project that...
Oh, it's called Chromium.
Chromium is the open-source project. Yeah,
right.
Okay. Well, you boot into Chrome. No, Chromium is like the Chrome OS that Google has, except that's an open source version of it. But anyway,
right.
So Google's, you buy a device called a Chromebook. It looks just like any other notebook, except it runs the Chrome OS.
Right.
Or you buy a Chrome box, which just looks like a little stripped down PC.
Like a Mac Mini or something.
Looks like a Mac Mini or a little mini PC like that.
Yep.
Except again, it runs the Chrome operating system. But the problem with this has always been that they're about as expensive as anything else.
Okay, right. Yeah, there's like $340-something for the...
The older Chromebooks
Chrome
were
box.
Like, yeah, or more, actually.
Yeah.
I think, but
yeah, there's two versions, I think. No, maybe just one.
There's only one version. There are two versions, but one of them they only gave away at the Google I.O. to developers.
All right.
And you can buy that version on eBay, which people claim it's better to buy that version on eBay than to buy the one they actually ship. Just because the eBay one was faster.
Okay.
Anyway, but the point is you can buy a full-blown PC or a full-blown notebook for about the same price.
Okay.
So the advantage of the Chromebook was always control, that you could, people couldn't screw it up, they couldn't break it, they wouldn't have to figure out how to use it.
To make this more understandable, you have to explain why the Chrome OS was created and what advantage the Chrome OS gives.
Well, it forces people to use Chrome. For one thing, it won't run any other browser, so it's just kind of, if Google can get it to catch on, people would be forced into the Chrome ecosystem.
Right. Well, what I mean is that for somebody who's not familiar with it, so, you know, Windows, you got your Windows boxes, and you've got your Mac OS boxes.
Right, so you have to, or Linux on
which, which has, and you've got your hard drive. It's basically runs on on various different hardware.
Right.
But they all consist of similar things, like hard disk, a lot of memory, fast CPU. All of those run an OS that takes time to boot up when you want to go ahead and do
stuff.
But
more important than that, to little kids or your grandparents or something, it can break down. All kinds of things can go wrong.
Sure,
with it.
You need support.
You can
support.
Catch viruses.
Right.
If it even doesn't catch any virus, just it can get very buggy. You have to worry about updates all the time and how to install updates and stuff.
So, in other words, using the OS to do things like create files, create multimedia applications, doing things like that, you would do that with any of these other systems.
Right. So you can do the identical thing as a Chromebook by merely booting any regular OS, starting the Chrome browser, and run the Chrome browser full screen.
Okay.
You essentially have the Chromebook or the Chromebox.
Right.
Except you have the whole maintenance issue of the OS.
Right.
And the virus capabilities.
So the advantage of Chrome OS is...
That supposedly it can't ever break.
Right.
It has a developer switch. So if the developer switch is set to normal mode, they all have SSDs that are hard drives.
Right.
But there is one now that has a hard drive. But boot stuff is all totally locked and can't, in theory, viruses can't get to it and everything.
Right.
And kids and your grandma can't screw it up.
Right.
No matter what they do to it, all you have to do is reboot and it comes back totally back to normal.
For the general public, for the average user, it just takes away all the stuff that might be too complicated for somebody who doesn't want to necessarily have to deal with the OS.
And it updates totally automatically. Like every time you reboot it, it's updated to the latest version.
You have to be connected to the internet, but essentially all you get with the Chrome OS is the Chrome browser.
Right.
And everything you do is done within the Chrome browser.
You can do some things offline, but only if there's the sort of things you can do offline. in the Chrome browser under Windows.
But mostly the point of the Chrome OS is that you're if you do most of your things on in the browser during the day anyway, the Chrome OS is going to take the rest of the crap that you wouldn't ever deal with out of the picture, and as a result, the machine will boot faster.
Yeah.
It's going to be a flawless experience.
Right.
Updates will happen over
and
the
also,
air.
And also, if you're like a school or a corporation, you can get a managed version of it where the administrator has a control panel where they can see what you're doing with every device.
Yep.
They can install
apps
in the sense of Chrome apps to every devices and stuff like that.
They can manage all these different systems from one box.
Right. They can make sure nothing's going funny with them and stuff.
Right. So anyway.
So the problem was they were just a little bit too expensive for the average person to want.
Right.
Unless you really fit this criteria.
And that was supposed to be the opposite. The advantage of having a Chromebook is that without all these extra components that were unnecessary,
it should be cheaper. But it wasn't really. I also found them kind of underpowered and slow and
in their defense, they didn't need that. Like with all this extra crap that was cut out.
The problem is they didn't have very good. I now learn what the problem was. Yeah, the processing power was kind of low.
Uh-huh.
I always had a feeling it didn't swap, like it had memory problems.
Okay.
You start too many tabs at once going, and it would slow down horribly.
Okay. I did see, though, when I did some research, you can SSH into them. You actually kind of take advantage of the Linux version.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's based on Linux, but very stripped down.
Okay.
You can do a little bit of stuff, and if you throw this developer switch, which used to be a hardware switch, nowadays it's a software setting, you can then install a different OS on it.
Okay.
But every boot, it asks you to confirm that you want that you know what you're doing.
Okay.
That you know that you're in development.
Well, I thought that was kind of cool because as a very cheap, inexpensive way of having a development box, that might be kind of cool.
Yeah.
If it's just Linux and stuff that you're doing work under.
Right.
Anyway.
So what they've done now is they've taken care of the pricing problem, kind of.
Samsung's.
Yeah. They ported the whole Chrome OS to the ARM processor.
Okay.
Which, you know, ARM processors just are much lower power, so they have much better battery life.
Right.
They can make cheaper devices out of them.
Okay.
So Samsung and Asus. I think Asus, yeah.
Yeah.
That they both have Chromebooks now with ARM processors that are really cheap. Like the Samsung one is like $250.
Okay.
It's not quite as beefed up. Not quite as much memory. Not quite as fast as the Intel based ones.
Okay.
But it runs the identical Chrome OS. It can run all the Chrome plugins and stuff.
Okay.
And it looks kind of like a MacBook Air, and it's under 3 pounds, very thin. You know, it has a halfway decent keyboard, halfway decent display, but it's only $250, you know, if you can live with being online all the time, just doing all the online stuff.
Okay.
So.
Huh.
And they say just very recently in the experimental versions of Chrome OS, they've added this option where you can turn on swapping more like old-fashioned OSs do swapping.
Okay.
And supposedly that takes care of all the performance problems now.
Okay.
So as soon as that's debugged and into the full-blown OS, then shouldn't have the problems I used to see on it.
So what you're saying is that the more they make it like a normal operating system, the better it performs.
But still, it's totally managed and won't break and all that stuff.
And I can see the niche where that might actually become popular to the people who are newbies and are not like that tech savvy.
No, especially for schools where the kids can't screw it up.
Teacher just has to
reboot it and it gets back to normal.
So there is a way for them to win if they keep going and Google keeps working on this.
I don't think they're marketing it very well. Like they have them in Best Buy's now, but they have of all the notebooks in Best Buy, they have one table with a big sign that says Google behind it, and it has the two Chromebooks, one Samsung and one Asus of the ARM variety.
Right.
But there's no clue what this is. If you don't already know what it is, they don't have any literature about it.
Do you think they're waiting for it to get better before they actually start fully marketing it?
Maybe.
Google is good at doing that sort of thing.
Or they just don't know how to market it, maybe?
No, I think they probably... Yeah, you might be right. I don't know.
Because the Best Buy people sure don't know anything about it. They won't explain it or anything.
Yeah. But I'm thinking that may be on purpose. Like, Google's holding back and waiting until it gets to a certain level of stability.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know. I don't know if it's true.
Google people have kind of...
They're definitely better than Microsoft.
I always found that Google people, though, about Chromebooks have always had this ego problem where they totally deny that there are any problems. Like, when I had mine, I had really horrible performance issues and crash issues.
Okay.
A million other people had exactly the same thing. But all the Google people on forums would just make excuses. You're doing something wrong.
Okay.
It's all your fault. You're stupid. You don't know what you're talking about.
Okay.
Why are you saying these things to the public? Why are you putting down armor? You know, they just never take the problem seriously.
Okay.
But maybe they are now since they're finally coming out with a swapping. But.
Well, let's switch over and talk about Windows 8.
Okay.
And Surface.
Sure.
Actually, let's not specifically talk about Surface.
Well, we never talked about
the best
that's so
way
old.
To
yeah.
The best way to run Surface is not to get a Surface tablet at all.
Right.
Get one of these powerful Slate devices that are not made by Microsoft.
True.
The most of them have been failing. These like laptops that run Windows 8 have the touch screens.
Right.
Mostly for battery life.
Oh, yeah. Right. Okay.
But I found this Engadget review of one device. It's actually kind of, they gave it really good stars. Acer Iconia W700.
Okay.
Core i5 Windows 8 Slate that doesn't skimp on battery life.
But that's a tablet that you plug a keyboard into or something? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Basically, I'll read a short portion of the article, and if you want, go to the slurpcast.com site for more.
Okay.
Until PC makers figure out what consumers want in their Windows 8 PCs, they'll be throwing different designs at the proverbial wall to see what sticks.
Okay.
One thing's for sure, though, laptop/tablet hybrids have already made it. So far, we've seen a mix of models, some with low-power Atom processors, and there's and others with laptop-grade Core i5 CPUs inside.
But those are for the full-blown Windows 8?
Yeah, and that's what this is.
Yeah.
That's what this is, yeah.
Okay.
Basically, a choice between amazing horsepower and long battery life.
Okay.
In Acer's lineup, specifically, we've already had a chance to play with the Iconia W510, an Atom-powered device with a keyboard dock.
Okay.
Now we're taking a look at the Iconia W700, $800 and up, an 11-inch tablet that's essentially an ultrabook with no keyboard attached.
Okay.
Based on that brief summary, you'd think that it had the same form factor as the smaller W510, but you'd be wrong.
Okay.
Whereas the W510 has a keyboard dock with a built-in memory, the W700 has a cradle with a modular kickstand that you can use to prop up the tablet in landscape or portrait mode. There's no battery inside the dock, and the keyboard is a standalone product. You'll have to pack it separately if you decide to go on a road trip. So is there any advantage to having a design with so many different pieces, and how does the Core i5 processor fare? The gist of the article is that it does fairly well, and it's probably the best of the full-blown Ultrabook tablets, slates, that run the full-blown Windows 8.
Except you have to carry the keyboard around separately.
And the dock. There's like four pieces that go along with it. They're not all, like, they don't fit together.
Can it click? This Microsoft's ad for the one that they make themselves, their ad is about... how it all clicks so loudly when you...
Yeah, it's got this stupid little thing that when you plug it into the keyboard, it kind of sits off to the right.
Okay.
We've seen this thing before. I don't know if you can see that.
It's like a dock or something?
Yeah, it's like this dock.
Oh, yeah,
it's a cream color.
Yeah.
You can't see it in the background, but...
Right. Okay.
Anyway. But, so, what's your thoughts?
Well,
what do you want to say about the Surface?
Have we talked about the Surface RT? We haven't done a recording since
then. No, we haven't.
Yeah, so I bought one of the Microsoft brand Surfaces that are out right now, the ones that run Windows RT. Which
what is the
this.
Surface? We need to go back a little bit.
Yeah, Surface is Microsoft's brand of Windows tablet where they're getting all their vendors pissed off by competing with them.
Yeah, so Microsoft decided to be like Apple and come out with their own tablet that runs Windows.
To compete with all the other people coming out with one.
They came out with... They decided they were going to come out with two different flavors. One was going to be released like a month ago, 2 months ago. And then later, around now, they were going to release a full-blown version that ran the full Windows 8 tablet, Windows 8 OS.
Right, and the Windows 8 one uses regular Intel chips, not necessarily Intel brand.
Is it called Windows Pro, or no, Surface Pro?
Maybe,
I think it's called Surface Pro. The previous version was called Surface RT.
Because RT is Windows RT, which is a different operating system.
It's a different processor.
It doesn't do anything,
It's a different processor, so they had to compile it for that particular processor.
No, but it's worse than that. It can only run applications in the new style.
Right.
It can't run traditional Windows applications. Even if traditional Windows application vendor is willing to recompile it for an ARM chip, you can't run it on there.
Yeah, that was the key. That was the key word, is that the RT, the Surface RT was compiled to run on an ARM processor, which is low power.
Right.
And these, the Pro is like an Intel processor, something like that.
Not necessarily Intel, but it's not necessarily Intel brand. I mean, it might be AMD brand or whatever. But at least it's the it's the 8086 style of processor rather than an ARM processor.
Okay.
And that runs a full-blown Windows without anything needing to be recompiled specially. So it runs all Windows apps and all that.
But
just like a regular notebook, except you rip the keyboard off and you just carry the tablet part around.
But at first glance, both the Surface RT and this Surface Pro are directly competing with iOS iPad, Apple's iPad products.
But the difference is, Wes... even no matter how much you've ever used an iPad, the moment you pick up a Surface RT and touch it, you'll immediately realize how much better it is.
How is that, Mark?
I don't know, but that's what this idea is. This guy at the Microsoft store, before the Microsoft store even opened, there was this guy who was always hanging around who worked
for
Microsoft. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we talked to him, and we argued with him about why anyone would want this as opposed to a iPad. And he said, just touch it and you'll understand.
So whenever you push him into a corner and you start talking about the differences between this device, which clearly you knew more about than he did, versus an iPad, he'd get to a point where he didn't know the answer.
Right.
His default was, well,
just touch it.
Just touch it.
Right.
Just pick it up and
touch it. And then I read an article that said that the special magnesium, magnesium? Yeah.
I think, magnesium.
That's magnesium, but it's coated in a certain way. I read an article that kind of explained that.
Okay.
When you touch it, you actually will like the feel because it's so unique the way it feels.
It's ionized in a way where when you touch it, the atoms make you happy.
Right. But so later on, I bought one on money back guarantee.
It didn't make you happy.
And it just felt like an iPad. I mean, I kind of liked it. I did kind of like it, except for the software.
Okay.
I did kind of like the hardware, but not because it was that special. But
you were impressed, as I recall, with their Office version.
Yeah, the Office. The Office was a desktop version of Office, but recompiled for ARM.
Right.
But they would not allow any third-party application to do the same thing.
But you had some really unique and interestingly formatted Word documents.
Yeah, and it seemed to be the real Office. Yeah, it definitely seemed to be the full-blown Office.
Yes.
And it looked exactly... And the operating system looked like the complete Windows. Like, you can go into the desktop.
Okay.
You can go into the control panel and do all the things. You go to registry editor.
Okay.
Absolutely everything seemed like the real Windows.
Okay.
It was more... But as a marketing thing, Microsoft refuses to allow third-party apps to run on it in the traditional desktop mode was the problem.
Okay.
Because Windows 8, people probably know by now, has totally different modes that have nothing to do with each other, where one looks more like an iPad-type app, and the other one looks like traditional desktop apps for Windows. So the RT only allows the new style apps to run.
Okay. What are they called? Metro?
Well, you're not supposed to call Metro. Yeah, Microsoft lost some trademark war on Metro.
My bad.
So they're just called the new style. They're full screen apps or something. Yeah.
But everybody talks about them as Metro apps.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. We're almost close to being done.
Okay.
What? We've been doing this for 56 minutes, believe it or not.
Really?
It doesn't seem like it at all.
I know, yeah.
So we should talk a little bit about applications or things that we want to share with the world.
Crappy ones or regular
ones? Mark has this thing that I think he wants to talk about and educate you on. If you're a fan of the show and you've listened to it in the past, we have a section of the show, a segment called Craps.
Which are critical applications, or as the guy who came up with the word craps called it, he thinks they're crappy applications. But what does he know? I claim that they're critical applications.
Okay.
Like, for example... Oh my bod, the music powered vibrator app for iPhone.
What's it called? Oh my what?
OHMIBOD, music powered vibrator.
Oh my bod.
Yeah.
Okay.
What does it do? Can I cut out this? I prepared this item so long ago, I forget now. Move your finger up and down the touch screen to change the speed of the vibration in real time.
Real time?
Yeah.
You mean not like.
You create all kinds of fancy vibration patterns.
Half our audience just turned off the play. They stopped playing this show right now.
Right, okay.
Half our audience of one.
And you can shove it way up here and have lots of fun with it.
Okay.
There's an app called Ugly Meter.
Okay.
where in theory you hold it, you take a picture of your face, it'll predict how ugly you are based on some scientific principles or something.
Okay.
That's a pretty critical application, isn't it?
Can I share something?
Sure.
Okay, so you know how Apple has the iTunes University application that you can download for iPad and iOS devices?
Yeah.
So the advantage to this app is that it basically allows you to search for professor speeches and lectures that have gone on within universities around the world. Or around the U.S., maybe around the world. Anyway, Stanford, Yale, a lot of the major universities are there. And you can pretty much pick whatever it is you're interested in, especially like programming languages, things like that, and get the actual, not only audio of the lectures, but presentations as well, including slides. And in the case of learning different languages, you'll get the actual professor's desktop as he's working on stuff.
So are these things that the professors made for iTunes University?
So
a lot of universities have stuff online anyway, or is it just ones that they made for their own purposes?
So my understanding is that Apple helped in giving them equipment and being able to guide them in presenting this.
Okay.
But my my article, what I wanted to share is not that. What I wanted to share is that Google wants to compete very badly with this, and they've come up with something called the Google Course Builder.
Okay.
I got this article off of Engadget on 11th of September.
Okay.
Google is well known for projects with unexpected origins. It's almost natural, then, that the code Google used to build a web course has led to a full-fledged tool for online education. The open-source Course Builder project lets anyone make their own learning resources complete with scheduled activities and lessons if they've got some skill with HTML and JavaScript. There's also an avenue for live teaching or office hours. The obligatory Google Plus tie-in lets educators announce Hangouts on Air sessions.
Okay.
Code is available immediately, although you won't need to be grading virtual papers to see the benefit. A handful of schools that include Stanford, UC San Diego, and Indiana University are at least exploring the use of Course Builder in their own initiatives, which could lead to more elegant internet learning, if also fewer exercises for slacking. Or for fewer excuses for slacking. So basically, I do like and support the idea that Google is trying to, in a way, compete with what Apple's already doing.
Okay.
Because it's not specific to iOS devices in this case. It's a web-based system.
Okay.
Whereas iTunes University is something an app you actually have to download on iOS devices.
You have to have it on iOS only?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. And there's no other alternative for people who don't have Apple devices.
Right. Okay.
So I support Google in this. I think it's really good.
Yeah.
If you're a teacher listening to the show, I encourage you to go ahead and Google that. Google the course builder.
But a teacher has to make both course of both directions, both ways, though. That's
what do you mean?
I mean, they have to make a Google version and an iOS version?
No, this is just Google doing it for the web only.
Right.
So if you built your course using Google Course Builder, it would be a web-based course.
So it'll work on an iPad, you think?
It would, I believe. Yeah. I mean, it's HTML. So
okay.
I haven't tried it specifically on like my iPad, but I believe this is, in a way, better. Although one advantage to using iTunes University is you can actually use it offline.
Right.
You don't have to be connected to the internet.
Exactly. Yeah.
So that app is kind of cool. I want to see more things like this for Android and iOS devices.
But you know what else Google just ripped off?
What's that?
Remember Apple... maybe 6 months or a year ago, did the iTunes Match? Remember what the iTunes Match does?
No, I don't remember that.
The iTunes Match
goes
through your hard drive.
That's right.
It takes all the music on your hard drive and uploads it as a backup.
Okay.
But if it's just a commercial music and Apple already knows what that music is, instead of bothering to upload it, they'll just hook you up with a copy of it already in the cloud?
Yeah, because they already have all the audio, all these songs stored somewhere.
Right, but if they don't have it, then they'll upload yours if it's some unique recording you did yourself.
Right.
So Google just this week came out with exactly the same thing for Android devices.
Right. And it did not require any software updates because it's being done on the back end.
Well,
apparently.
But for Windows or Mac, though, it does.
Oh, okay.
You do have to install a program for Windows or Mac.
But on your Android device, it does not, apparently.
I think the player part, maybe.
Right.
But if you actually want to upload your library, like, it knows about iTunes libraries, then it'll upload your iTunes library to Google server, like Apple does.
It did say, I saw the article, and it did talk about iTunes specifically, so that's not going to get swallowed well by Apple.
Right.
Okay.
Well, it won't do the DRM. It won't do anything with DRM. But
right. But all the open DRM free.
Yeah, because I have it running right now in the background of my machine running. Uploading.
Okay.
And the one smart thing they did, they have a bandwidth manager. Because normally when you have things like this that upload a bunch of stuff, like the Apple one does this, it kills your whole network because networks aren't very robust for too big a down upload going on all the time.
And these are raw binary files.
Yeah.
Sure.
So it could take days to upload. Well, the Google one lets you set a maximum bandwidth, which I like a lot.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Awesome.
But
very, very cool.
Just on that.
Anything else amazing? Should we wrap it up?
Sure.
Yeah, go ahead. Okay.
So there's something else amazing, but I can't remember the name of the app.
Okay.
There's an app that has Steve Wozniak in the game, where Steve Wozniak is the character, and you manipulate him. He jumps around and does things.
All right.
But anyway.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah, I forget the name of it, though.
Okay. Well, thanks, everyone, for listening to the show.
Sure.
Mark and I try to do this as often as we can. I want to say that we do this once a week, but we don't.
Right.
Things get busy and life goes on. Life happens, but we'll try to. At least it's easier with the audio. It's not a lot of setup time.
Yeah.
So I'd like to encourage you guys to listen and spread the URL around slurpcast.com.
Right.
So anything else?
Okay.
Yeah.
No,
okay. Thanks, Mark.
Okay.